Right, we're ready to go.
So
you have to understand there's quite a lot of industrial past has disappeared. So there'll be a certain amount of imagination involved.
Yeah, see, I can see that.
What used to be there.
Because it's more or less like a desert, and it makes it extremely difficult for everyone to talk with. But anyway,
we're all access, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. Right, well, we're not going to walk through government. Government itself is a history that goes way back. So we'll just start with down at the Govan High Church. You know that one? Yeah. It's different stories there. It's had a three church build and a high church or another. There's been a church on that site. Five different times, you know, built. So Govan is a site that's got a long history of being a spiritual sort of place. You've got they picked Celt, Viking and Christian in that church at the moment. And one of the unique features is it's a round cemetery. Now, that used to be the thing, the early Christian. It was to stop the spirits from hiding in the corners. So you had to have a round cemetery. That all disappeared, but Govan's one of the few that still has it. And the stones and things in it, you can visit it, but you need to get out. There's a woman holds a key, you phone her, she takes you in, and you can see the stones dating back. It's as far, I've dated it back to 575 or something. So there's been a spiritual thing there in Govan since then. And then if you can move over just from the church, which is now a spare bit of ground. Again, you're going to use your imagination here. There was a place called Dumpster Hill or Doomster Hill. It was a man-made mound, and it's a peculiar shape, but not like that, then up again. And it had a kind of stairway up, and it was used, they're not sure, but the spiritual things were held on it. They also think it had a legal connection, and some people link it to the Druids. So that's the kind of early history of Govan. But we'll jump forward now. And if you go up that way, you've got Fairfields, and down that way, Harlan Road. Two of the biggest yards in the Clyde. And a radical part of that is in Fairfields. If you go back, 1937 was the apprentices' strike, Clydeside apprentices' strike. It changed the whole way apprentices were treated in industry. And it started not in Fairfields, but a small factory called Lobnitz, I think it was called. And there was only a handful of apprentices, and they approached Fairfields. Fairfields is a massive yard, and the apprentices come out in the middle of the week, and that mushroom that they were able to, with the numbers, pick at other yards, and within a week there was 10,000 apprentices across the Clyde, and it spread down to Tyneside and what have you. That was 1937, and they gained quite a lot of recognition for apprentices. It was organised by the apprentices. They run games to keep everybody occupied. They organised their own printing. And so it was a totally apprentice organised strike, and it was very successful. And we jump forward again.
What did they change?
Pardon?
What sort of rights did they gain, the apprentices? Like, what did they change for them?
Well, the thing is, at that stage, apprentices didn't really have any standing. You know, they were just cheap labour. They were brought in. There was no relationship to the number of apprentices to a journeyman. So the yards used apprentices cheap labour. You could have one journeyman, income six apprentices, do the work, and then after 5 years of cheap labour, you get a certificate so you can earn a wee bit more. So one of the things that the apprentices, they drew up a charter, and one of the things was that there had to be a fixed ratio between journeymen and apprentices. They also got recognition that they could negotiate. Before that, they were treated more or less as serfs apprentices. And the one main one was that they had union recognition, and they could negotiate their conditions, and they got this relationship of journeyman to apprentices, so it was at least you were going to be maybe one journeyman, one apprentice, or two apprentices, and that would be it. So you were going to learn your trade that bit better, and of course they also got a wage increase. So that's considered a successful strike. You've jumped forward to Fairfield. I'm sticking to Fairfield because we're in government basically, but there's a lot. Fairfield's 1971, you maybe don't know, but I do remember, but the Upper Clyde shipyard working, that started in Fairfield with one of the main yards, and that lasted 18 months where the workers worked in the yard, controlling the yard, because the government at that time was trying to shut them down, and they won again, support from all over the place, marches and various things. I'm not going into detail with these things because each one's a big subject in its own, and I'd be delighted to talk maybe off at the CCA. I'm only going through Govan rapidly. The Pearce Institute, again, shipyard connected. William Pearce at one time owned Fairfields, and he built the Pearce Institute for the poor people of Govan, and it was to give them a place that up above the door it says something like, "All welcome, all wayfarers, the poor," and all the rest of it. But like all these so-called philanthropists, he wanted to stamp his ideas on the people. So if you also go up, you'll find there's a woman's door and a man's door. They had a women's library, reading room and club, and they had a men's library, reading room and club, and there the twain should meet. Because you know what happens when working class meet, they do horrible things. So that was the idea behind it, to keep this kind of segregation. Some people say it was also religiously segregated. It was a Protestant thing, but that is nonsense. There was absolutely no history of that being the case. What started it, that kind of thought, was the fact that quite often there was a very reverend so-and-so on the board, and people tended to think that was because of Protestant. But at no time was there a religious segregation in the Pearce Institute. It was a man-woman segregation. That's pretty violent. But anyway, so we'll go from there and start walking and head up towards this way, Govan Road, past Sunny Govan Radio, across Bells Bridge, follow the river a wee bit, then up through what's now the Financial Centre and into the CCA. But see if this area you're looking at just now, I mean, if you try and visualise this back the 50s, 60s and before, this was a massive, densely populated area. I mean, there was rows and rows of tenements, single lines, human kitchens, all that sort of stuff. And where you are now is the second big yard. This was more or less Halloween Row. And to let you know the actual volume that worked in these shipyards, the three yards, Halloween Row, Fairfields and then Stevens further down, they couldn't let them out at the same time because the infrastructure of the traffic couldn't cope. So the Whistle and Harrons blew at 20 past five and they poured out to the queues of trams, buses and what have you. 10 minutes later, Fairfields whistle blew and they poured out, and then Stevens came out last to get the other convoy of buses and trams. So it's that's a kind of volume of people that works and a lot of them live. And what you see now is nothing, you know.
It's gone. Crazy to think that such a huge
it's
industry
a
can go.
Yeah.
But also they have to be really organised. 10 minutes
fun.
To get rid of like loads of people out the area, you'd have to have a really good public transport system. You know, no late buses.
No, I think it was a matter of a crash program and people leaving voluntarily because there was nothing left to do. But it's emptied very quickly, and I always think it's sad, but it's a history of being a very spiritual place where people have always congregated, and it's now a kind of wilderness. You know, the council has maybe trying to change it now, but for a number of years it was where they dumped people to put me house. You know, so it had a very high rate of drug addicts and things like that. But people always fight back. Also, you know, people do try to sort out their own wee bit, and it is improving, you know. But it takes time, and it takes people with money and jobs. This next building up here is quite a wee kind of, what should we say, the last sort of remnant of what you could tie up history here. It's the old Seaman's Mission. And Glasgow, though it doesn't look like, it was a very throbbing, seafaring kind of place. And these missions were set up because the normal procedure was when a ship hit port, they paid off the men because they were going to be in port for 4 days, 5 days. So the men get paid off. They maybe kept a chief engineer and that. The rest get paid off. So they had to find somewhere to stay till they find another ship and then back away again. So these places were set up for that sort of purpose, but they couldn't cope with the actual numbers. So it set up a wee second industry. Most of the property around here was private landlords, and taking in lodges was illegal, for as far as they were concerned, because you were making money out of their property, sort of thing. but it was quite common practice to take in a sailor because you knew you only had a lodger for 4 days. So they had a wee make-up bed somewhere, and quite often they would eat his bed, his breakfast, and they'd do his washing or something like that, and they'd be off in 3 days' time, and it was a wee source of income. So the houses round, and no doubt the seamen got to know which houses and would tell each other in Glasgow, Neptune Street number 4, Mrs. So-and-so. But this is what's left of the seamen's mission. If you look, you'll see some of them have still got curtains and things here, which is a sad story because it's a nice building. And it's just been left in a desert and expecting people to think that it could turn into a home.
In the middle of nowhere, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, these are new, so before that it was even more isolated. It was sitting more or less at the side of a shipyard, which disappeared. And as I said, they turned it into flats, and people bought them, and then a lot of them just abandoned them because they couldn't sell them or look for the problems. A sad story for a spiritual centre.
Is that the date over there?
It was
on that panel?
1889, I think it was. 1890, something. The date's round the side, actually. Late 18. No, I get dates in a fangle because I read that many of them.
It's an amazing looking building, especially with the tree growing out of the veranda there.
The balcony.
The balcony, yeah. Do you know what kind of tree it is?
Oh, it'll be one blown from this lot round about here.
Because it's not, they've got a buddleia at the top.
Is it due to be torn down, you know?
Well, I think what normally happens with Glasgow Council is they list it as a building, which means you can't develop it without doing all kinds of regulations, so it lies, and then eventually it starts to fall down and they pull it down, you know, because they can't knock down a listed building, so you leave it alone long enough, you'll need to, because this is why the road's blocked off to stop the cars, because there's a risk of it falling down. So it's one way they get to clear it, you know.
Want to buy it and do it up because it's such a beautiful place.
Being a listed building, you have hit with so many restrictions. You can't alter the face here, you can't do this, you've got to use certain types of windows, da da da. So developers don't want that.
Right.
The cost of developing that would probably be astronomical. So you'd be talking about very expensive flats would they sell in this area, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's developers are saying, no, we'll buy the land. Look at Dinamo, we'll buy the land. But being a listed building, they'll wait till it falls down.
So what is that?
What?
What is that?
It's the old seamen's mission, where the sailors for the Clyde and all over the world come in. And they signed off their ship to get a cheap head breakfast up there and things like that. There were several of them around the city to accommodate the seamen as they signed off their ships.
Wind on the mics.
Ah. This is about all that's left of Harland and Roche, sort of thing. Harland and Roche stretch from Govan right along to Prince's Docks, more or less, and then down to the Clyde. Fairfields and Harland's were two of the biggest yards. John Brown's eventually took over the biggest in the Clyde, but these two were, you know, at one stage the biggest yards in Britain, probably at that stage. Oh, don't ask me the name, we built a lot of them. I worked in Fairfield actually. I served my time in Fairfields, and I worked on the Empress of Japan, which became a hospital ship during the war, Devonshire. And after the war, they couldn't name it the Empress of Japan again, so we brought it in and done it up and named it the Empress of Britain. But they made all kinds of, I worked in a destroyer, HMS Delight, the cruiser, HMS Blake. There's lots of names that are well known in shipping, but don't mean much to anybody else.
I went to see a performance in here a couple of months ago.
Ah, that's right, the Sheds, I think you caught it from the I always think it's the Sheds, you know. A shipyard where people learn their living for years, and it just becomes an empty shed. Anyway, it's doing something rather than fun doing. That's the main thing. So this was probably the wall that ran down for Harland and Roche. It's difficult to visualise it now because, as I said, I worked here was a teenager right up to a certain time, so it's a long time ago. I'd heard my head at that time.
Is there brick underneath the metal?
Pardon?
You saying, like Bob was saying, it's been clad, is there
brick?
Yeah,
you can see that wall there. Well, it was probably similar to that, you know, brick wall. There'd be a wall running with doors for people to enter the yards. And there's probably an office block and things like that, you know. But the yard
like
is stretched.
The yard, I'm just trying to get my bearings. Fairfield. It's all brick.
And then you go behind that and right down to the river is all the workshops and things like that. That's just the yard. They usually stretch quite a bit that way, the big yards, and then down to the river. Uh-huh. This was one of the biggest, and Fairfield was one of the biggest. And then you had John Brown's, which became the biggest.
Well, that's the guy. Now, I remember coming here as a kid, and you'd pass the tenements and you could see the ships poking over the top of the tenements.
Aye. Well, that's
the scale was amazing.
Yeah, that's something I think it's worth mentioning. That you could actually see the ships as they were built in the stocks before they were launched, and they reached a height where the tenements stopped here and the ships here. The size is difficult to grasp, but you were looking at a tenement block getting pushed into the water to get launched.
This was Harland and Wolff.
This was Harland Wolff's.
That's why it's kind of difficult and excited about this modern architecture that's got up now. You know, when you memorised all that dynamic about looking at ships and the propellers, where you could walk past the iron works place and there'd be eight guys on top of a propeller, you know, chipping away.
Yeah, this is something something I think has changed dramatically as the manufacturing now seems to be small, you know, television, cars, portables, computers. But my day manufacturing was locomotive steam engines, propellers 18 feet in diameter, you know, bronze, see, it's all gone. Where are these big things? We don't make big things anymore.
We just look at them on the on films. Yeah. Like Star Wars special effects.
As you know, a ship's launched, it's empty. You know, it's just a shell, and it couldn't launch it. It was full, it'd be too heavy. And then it goes into the dock, and that's where they start building the engines. And when you go down in, and you look up, you're in some massive well, you know, just steel just going up, and then you see the sky up above, and in comes all the pipes and stuff and the fitters, and that'll put it into place. But everything was heavy, everything was hard, everything was gigantic. You know, when you lifted a pipe, it took 2 years to lift a pipe. None of this copper 15 millimetre stuff.
Listen, we're going to have to walk a bit earlier.
I'm only stopping because people stop.
So have to speak up a bit. What's a nice name for a leader?
Facilitator.
You're the tour facilitator.
Oh yeah? Wow. Don't start putting pressure on me, boy. I just can't take pressure.
Really, did you have a hobnob?
Okay, Browns now. You can grasp the size of a shipyard now if you go down to Clydebank, because you can see from the road where John Brown's used to be, and it's a country. You see it stretching for miles. It's flat land and down.
Trains used to go into the yard, so stop all the traffic in the road for trains to cross the road.
Trains used to go along here because the rails run, the tram lines run along here. But a lot of the stuff that was being brought into the yards was extremely heavy, and it was made somewhere else. So it would be a railway engine that would bring it, and then the railway engine would leave and join the tram lines and take it into the shipyard. So you had these engines going up and down the tram lines of the sort. You're entering this bit here. Prince's Dock, Pacific Quays area, became the garden centre. But Prince's Dock, there's a well-known photograph of two young soldiers guarding the gates at Prince's Dock, which was the English troops that were sent up after Bloody Friday in 1919 to guard the streets of Glasgow, because we're afraid of what the workers were going to do. Bloody Friday happened in George Square when there was an attack on a demonstration by police, an unprovoked attack during the 40-hour strike, and so much battle ensued throughout the city that they locked down Maryhill Barracks in case the troops joined, and brought up 10,000 English troops in a tank regiment. A lot of people don't know Glasgow was under this. There was machine guns posted in the roofs of George Square, and troops with fixed bayonets patrolled the streets and guarded various places. It's to this day, it's still the biggest military operation the British state has used against its own people. And it was here in Glasgow after the 40-hour strike in 1919. It started again in the Clydeside through the Clyde Workers Committee, which was a shoot-on from the Clyde to the Labour Withholding Committee. So there's a lot of history that emanating to this Clydeside area rather than just Dublin. You know? This is the big dry dock. If you cross, you can have a look at it. This is one of the large dry docks in Glasgow, and what's left of it. And if you can try and visualise, by the way, where it is and the size of it, and look at where the river is, how they can
punch it.
And you want to say to amazing things. And so they got it around the bend. And then eventually and towed it in here. My personal experience with this was I'm up an all-night shift, trying to remove a propeller from a boat in here, and it was an all-night swinging a hammer until the propeller came off, I think about 6 in the morning. So it was a nice, easy job. The shipyards were nice.
How much did they pay you for that?
Oh, coppers, I was still an apprentice. Let me think now, I'll be a fourth-year apprentice. I'd probably be getting about £4 a week. As a fourth-year apprentice.
And what would the boats have looked like? Would they look a bit like the kind of big cargo boats that you see nowadays, like big
metal tanks? Yeah, there wasn't much difference in that. They were massive. This was just a container that looked like a large cargo vessel, but we were actually to get the propeller off it to go for repair, and it had obviously been on for years, and trying to separate it for the shaft required men swinging a hammer all night, changing hands. And it just went on and on and on, and 6 o'clock the cheer went up as the propeller swung off.
So when did they like stop using this?
This all died around about the 50s, 60s era. You know, after that the yards just shut them down. The last big fight was 71-72 to keep the Upper Clyde. That was, I said, the Upper Clyde shipyards working, which was from 71-72, 18 months I think. They occupied the shipyards to keep them open, because the Tory government at the time was want to, I don't know if you remember phrases from history like no lame ducks, you know, if a shipyard won't make money, shut the thing. The workers occupied these 5 yards, Stevens, Fairfields, Connell's, Yarrow's and John Brown's, and they occupied them for 18 months.
And kept them working?
Keep working.
Kept working them?
Yeah. They worked the yards. All kinds of accountants to feed money here and there, and the thing kept moving. Well, this is what I keep getting angry at. Where is the occupations? Where is the crowds doing things to change things? Where are the people standing up to stop something happening? I mean, there's a lot of struggles in Glasgow, and you can say success. You know, that was a success. 18 months in the yards, no going home, working, and save 5 yards. Now, if you'd imagine what that meant at the time, if those 5 yards had closed, the sheer devastation and unemployment to this whole area.
Did people stay in them for the entire time?
Yeah, they stayed in there.
Wow.
There was a lot of support. Oh, the support, they get support a lot. There was marches, there was demonstrations, there was gigs, there was all kinds of things to raise money and awareness. Certain MPs, Tony Benn, came over and marched and spoke, and religious people, you know, the whole, because it was a community, not just a community, it was a city. You know, you were going to kill a city if you took these 5 shipyards out and shut them. Where did the people go? Where did they work?
Where did the industry move to? Why did the industry suddenly drop down?
Well, you'll need to speak to Mrs. Thatcher. basically, she had this brilliant idea that we could get rid of mass industries. We keep walking, by the way. We could get rid of mass industries and we could survive on the financial systems in the country and import all the stuff we wanted. This would do two things. It would break up working class unity, it would break up working class communities and resistance, and it would break up the power of the unions. So basically that's what was happening. Orders were placed overseas and
threats were placed overseas. It's creating such an artificial system, though. It's creating such an artificial system based on something that technically doesn't really
exist. Yeah, but is that not what capitalism is? Capitalism is an artificial system whereby somebody sort of sets up and tells you to do this and make that and I'll make money off you.
Yeah.
That's not a natural thing.
The flavour of the money for service industries at that time, not financial.
And we decided that we could turn these industrial cities into tourist centres and we could make a lot of money from tourism. But that meant a cheap wage society. So hotel porters, bar staff, all that sort of thing. And so instead of skilled tradesmen, we were shifting to that sort of thing.
Unskilled work,
cheap labour, making money in tourism in the financial centre and import the goods we need.
Aye,
they're a small yard.
Is that a tunnel underneath it?
It may have been.
Because I think, is there one the other side?
Maybe just to get down to working underneath the ship. You know, because once that water was out, the ship was propped and you worked underneath and round about it. Again, you try to visualise that photograph of 1919 where the soldiers standing outside Princess Docks would be somewhere about here. I can't think where exactly the gate square. I wasn't here in 1919, by the way.
I wouldn't have thought that you were.
Years ago, this would be like... Oh, that's what I'm saying. This where they're coming to now was Princess Docks. Just hundreds of boats in, unloaded, took cargo on. No, it just is a busy, busy place. It would be crawling with horses and carts, buses and lorries.
Dockers.
It would be dockers going in, dockers going out. There'd be shift workers going on and off. It was just a continual throbbing.
Princess Dock. Princess King George picked up.
That's what, see, honestly, this is what I look at now, and
see,
I look at this wasteland.
I can't remember where they were now.
And that's what I'm saying. I'll try to visualise where the gates were. I think down here you've got Princess Pacific Quay, which was part of Princess Docks. And I think the gate where the soldiers stood would be there. So I think we're coming up to a gate up here, which might have been where you'd have seen the young guys who were fixed bayonets in case the Glasgow workers decided to either occupy it or loot it or whatever it is they were expecting them to do.
So remember, the 50s actually came up to the Brimilla to get on. Paddle steamers to go to Tinnabrew.
Yeah. The one side of the Clyde, as you go up to the head up on top of the Clyde, going up on the left, it was mainly sort of local steamers, you know, Dunoon, Rossy, all that sort of stuff. On the other side was all the Ireland, America, plus all the cargo and all the loading and none of that sort of thing. I mean, you had the Burnsley airline, which I think done, was it Camel airline?
Camel
airline, which done, I think they done Ireland as well. In the end, the Anchor Donaldson line. You had all the different shipping lines, which had different routes, P&O, Pacific and Orient. And they carried the cargoes and brought them in.
My father was in the Canard line. He worked in the Canard.
The Canard was
that was more
passenger orientated. But this is Princess Dock starting here. This whole sort of bit, which became the garden centre, I think, as well. Part of the garden centre, the garden festival.
And they filled in a lot of the docks.
They filled in a lot of the docks for the festival. So what you're seeing isn't really a true picture of what the docks were like. I think this might have been, it's a new wall now, right enough. I think the gate to Princess Dock would be about here. And you would have the troops standing in guard. This is an odd development. They've built flats in here. But it's a kind of isolated... I don't know whether they'll just abandon development further or what, but... If you go into the docks, you can actually see an idea of what they were like.
Was some of this not left over from the Garden Festival?
flat.
Yeah. Because the garden festival was all in here, and they had built houses for the garden festival. Yeah. I'm not sure if they were there at the time.
Again, you're lost because they're filled in a lot of the place. But this is where the place, you know, the ships would come in and unload cargo, shipped into warehouses, onto horses, carts and whatever, and distributed across the country.
Does anything happen in this kind of stretch of water now?
They don't seem to use the river because much they've now, got do like. They? It's kind of abandoned.
Pontoon.
To me, they'll be looking at some grand plan of putting nice big flats here, expensive cafes, marinas and that sort of thing, with a notice up saying, peasants, keep out, go back to your reservations. You know, that's to me what they're looking at, I would imagine. I don't see them thinking of bringing ordinary people in and building some kind of vibrant community. I don't think that's on the cards. But as I said, you're getting a glimpse of it, but these docks were filled in, a lot of them were filled in, and this is where the ships come in and unloaded and done their thing.
Yeah,
but one of the things is, if you just look over there, that old building with the trees is the old Govan Town Hall. Now, it gives you an idea of what Govan was, because it's a massive big hall for a wee district, but it wasn't a wee district. There was actually, Govan expanded to the other side of the river, and if you go into Partick in these places and you look at some of the old buildings, you'll see Govan Parish written on them.
All right, so it was
because Govan was actually mushrooming bigger than Glasgow, and it was actually thought that Govan would annex Glasgow, and it would be the city of Govan and there would be a district of Glasgow. But what swung it was the tobacco lords. The money started pouring into the upper reaches of the river, and Glasgow got tremendous wealth and started annexing the districts around it, and eventually annexed Govan. So you had the city of Glasgow with Govan. But it was touch and go. This was a massive town. It wasn't a district. It was Govan Town, that was Govan Town Hall, and the Govan Parish extended right over all right. Partick, White Inch. If you go to White Inch as well, you'll see some of the school, the old school to the
school
left.
School's Govan Parish,
this is Govan Parish School.
Yeah.
But this is Govan.
Aye, that's not Govan.
So the reason was that they had expanded their area.
So this was bigger than Glasgow?
Yeah, at one stage it was growing faster and bigger, and they reckoned it would soon absorb as Glasgow would have been doing in villages. It would absorb the other ones. But money swings things, so the wealth went up that way. And Glasgow mushroomed the sunger wealth into shipbuildings, factories, you name it. And they annexed the various towns and villages around the world. And just doing that. So it could have been in the city of Glasgow. And visited the district of Glasgow. Right, are we moving on? And as you go out there, you can have a look at the size of Govan Town Hall as you pass it.
It's going to be heavy rain tonight.
Well, maybe we should do an evening stroll.
What, in a bit of Glaswegian sunshine?
Yeah, it's got an authentic feel to it, yeah.
But it's an amazing building, the town hall.
That's what I'm saying.
Look
it,
at that dome.
It gives you an idea when that's the centre of Govan, you know.
Yeah.
That was the Govan cross, the church, and the town hall was here.
At the entrance almost.
So you're saying, no, this is the size of Govan.
Yeah.
And then you go over across the river and you see Govan Parish, Govan this, Govan that. So it was a massive area, and growing because of the wealth of the shipyards, dragging in employment and things like that. It's a fine old building, but like most of these old buildings, it will be left a listed building. It will not get developed, and then it will not be able to keep it up, and it will get left empty. And then we'll get nice yuppie flats there.
You just think, I look at these buildings and I think, oh, that'd be fantastic as like artist studios, you know, getting people in there, getting stuff happening.
But the only way that happens,
nice workshops with the kids, man.
Yeah, but the only way that happens is if people take control of it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in Kinning Park. I don't know if you remember the Kinning Park
conflict. Yeah.
I mean, that was a sit-in. The council wanted to close it and sell it off to a developer or something, and the locals occupied it, and I think they slept in it for think it was 3, 5, 6 months something like that. And eventually the council conceded and sold it for £1, I can't remember the details. And it was taken over and run for this artist, and it was a after school place for kids in it. So, but it was, again, the people said no. And it's the only way ever anything ever gets done. You've got to stand up and say, no, this is not what we want. And this is still Prince's Docks out on here. I think that, I'm not sure now, that was part of a hydraulic pumping house that worked a lot of the equipment.
The big kind of Italian tower. Wow.
I'm sure that was part of it. There's another bit stuck on the end of it.
It's amazing to see building in brick.
Yeah.
You don't ordinarily see it, and there's a lot of brick in Govan.
Yeah, a lot of brick work.
Everything else is kind of, you know, tenemental sandstone
it's
or
all
something.
A lot of sandstone, but here there's a lot of brick walls, brick buildings, yep. And even these towers.
Beautiful.
But I presume at this stage.
Digital Media Quarter.
Pardon?
It's announcing it's the Digital Media Quarter.
That's Pacific Key. But that, I think Pacific Key's over, that's it. So maybe in there somewhere, who knows.
BBC and STV.
But the BBC buildings are in there now.
Yeah.
They moved over. And it gives you some impression to just the status of the district. You know, it wasn't a village hall, this was the town hall. You know? This was all just a road, and there was a docks on this side, and over this side was tenements and factories. Unbelievable rapid change. And I used to get out of Fairfields at 5:30, and then I'd run across Elder Park and catch a bus. And then